What drives someone from a cheap Florida motel room surrounded by cocaine to the halls of neuroscience research? The answer isn't as simple as hitting rock bottom. It's about recognizing a fundamental truth that applies far beyond addiction. Our brains are magnificent prediction machines that can also become our greatest prison. When a homeless friend declared there would never be enough cocaine for us, it wasn't poetry, it was neuroscience. That moment of clarity launched a decades-long journey into understanding why some substances hijack our neural circuitry so completely that one taste is never, ever enough. This isn't just a story about drugs. It's about how our brains process pleasure, pain, and everything in between, and why understanding this machinery matters for anyone who's ever wondered why they can't stop scrolling, eating, or chasing any experience that promises relief. Your brain operates like a thermostat, constantly adjusting to maintain stability. Without contrast, there's no experience, just neural noise. That first morning coffee feels transcendent. By cup three, you're just avoiding a headache. In the 1950s, researchers gave rats the ability to stimulate their brain's pleasure center. The rats pressed the lever thousands of times per hour, ignoring food, water, and mates, collapsing from exhaustion, then resuming. They'd found the mesolimbic dopamine system, a neural highway that doesn't create pleasure, but screams, "Pay attention, something important is happening." Dopamine isn't a pleasure chemical, it's an anticipation alarm. A second pathway enables action toward or away from whatever triggered the alert. Drugs exploit this mercilessly, delivering dopamine surges faster and stronger than anything evolution prepared us for. The brain adapts to oppose their effects, meaning regular users need the drug just to feel normal while getting high becomes increasingly impossible. Every addictive substance, despite wildly different chemical structures, converges on this pathway. Socrates predicted this millennia ago. Pleasure and pain are strange companions, forever bound together. The brain's plasticity means it reshapes itself upon first drug exposure. Drink alcohol and your brain doesn't passively receive its depressant effects. It actively counteracts them by becoming more excited. This is why you sleep poorly after drinking, even though alcohol is a sedative. Solomon and Corbett's opponent process theory maps this neural tug of war. The A process represents the drug's effects, relaxation, euphoria, energy. The B process is your brain's counterpunch, producing opposite effects. With repeated exposure, the B process grows stronger and faster while the A process remains constant. Eventually, the drug stops producing pleasure. It just prevents withdrawal misery. This explains why coffee drinkers aren't more alert than non-drinkers. They're just less exhausted without their fix. The drug becomes a chemical treadmill. You run faster just to stay in place. Even after decades of sobriety, those neural adaptations persist. The addictive mindset doesn't want moderation. It wants excess, always. Cannabis floods THC across brain regions, processing memory, time, and sensory experience. Not like alcohol's sledgehammer or cocaine's precision, but like spilled paint. The endocannabinoid system includes anandamide, bliss in Sanskrit, which works backwards across synapses, highlighting important neural messages. When high, your brain shouts, "This matters," about everything. The mall becomes a sensory playground, pizza achieves transcendence. The problem? When everything is highlighted, nothing stands out. Memory formation collapses because significance loses meaning. Chronic use triggers receptor downregulation. The brain reduces cannabinoid receptors to maintain balance, making the world genuinely duller without the drug. Cravings persist years after quitting. Early sobriety feels drained, but around 3 months in, fall foliage suddenly explodes into technicolor as receptors recover. The lesson? Infrequent use prevents downregulation. Regular use slowly steals your ability to find the unenhanced world interesting, trading borrowed pleasure today for diminished capacity tomorrow. If addiction were a love story, opiates would be its most devastating chapter. The early relationship feels perfect. Subtle contentment smoothing life's rough edges. This isn't dramatic euphoria. It's something more dangerous. Feeling finally completely okay. But tolerance develops with merciless efficiency. What began as perfect solace transforms into desperate yearning, then grief, then bleak isolation. Users degrade themselves, seeking fragments of former bliss. This pattern fuels an epidemic, killing more people than car accidents. Opiates mimic endorphins, are natural painkillers, but obliterate the brain's delicate balance. Tolerance becomes staggering. Addicts can consume 150 times a lethal dose and feel merely right. Recovery crawls painfully slow, nearly 6 days to regain just half your morphine sensitivity. Most heroin users begin with prescription painkillers before turning to cheaper street alternatives. Alcohol's ubiquity makes it seem benign, but familiarity breeds dangerous complacency. This small molecule affects virtually every brain system simultaneously, enhancing GABA, the main brake, reducing glutamate, the main accelerator, activating opioid receptors, and compromising neural membranes. It's a pharmacological sledgehammer we've swung for 11,000 years. Despite only 10% of drinkers developing problems, the carnage is staggering. 3.3 million deaths annually worldwide, 90,000 yearly in the US, twice as many as prescription opioids and heroin combined. Why do some people use substances recreationally while others spiral into addiction? Four factors converge: inherited biological disposition, extensive drug exposure, particularly during adolescence, environmental catalysts, and their complex interplay. The genetic evidence is compelling. Identical twins show twice the likelihood of similar addiction patterns compared to regular siblings. Biological children of addicts maintain elevated risk even when adopted by non-addicted families. But genetics isn't destiny. Thousands of genes interact with environment. Epigenetic modifications regulate gene activity and constitute cellular memory of ancestral experiences, potentially explaining the missing inheritance in addiction. Early exposure fundamentally reshapes developing brains. Marijuana use before brain maturation causes structural changes, producing cognitive deficits and permanently reduced reward sensitivity. Natural variation in dopamine signaling contributes to reward response. High dopamine tone enhances sensitivity to rewarding experiences, drowning out drawbacks. But context matters most. Modern drugs are exponentially more potent. The difference between chewing coca leaves and smoking crack is like drinking from a teacup versus a fire hose. Another critical shift: solitary drug taking versus culturally endorsed ritual use. Isolation is both an index and driver of abuse, and we're living in the most isolated era in human history. Despite massive research, neuroscience remains in its infancy. Chronic brain disorders still lack causal explanations and effective cures. Some propose extreme solutions: brain lesions, deep brain stimulation, or vaccines that permanently neutralize drugs. These "if you can't control your behavior, we'll do it for you" approaches raise profound questions about appropriate intervention. 3 decades of sobriety teaches this. Recovery isn't about restriction, but expansion. It restores our most precious commodity, freedom to choose. Addiction strips this freedom, which is why imposing permanent limits makes no sense as a cure. We've stopped expecting addicts to cure themselves, but waiting for biomedical cures means missing our own role in the epidemic. We're suffering from depth deprivation, depth found most naturally in honest connections. We nourish addiction by embracing false dichotomies like us versus them and the myth that happiness can be pursued individually. The opiate epidemic reveals what's been true all along. Most addicts cross into uncontrolled use in plain sight, with virtually no chance of regaining control once they cross that threshold. Addiction isn't just a brain disease. It's a human problem requiring human solutions. The most powerful intervention isn't a pill or therapy. It's genuine connection, offered without judgment, extended across the divide separating the struggling from the stable. There may never be enough of any drug, but there can be enough of each other.